Pennywise, Pound Foolish by Foster Marks. The lightweight molecular accelerator gives a limp beep, and Jack yanks open the door. He grabs the bowl and cups it in his hands, happy for the warmth, then shoulders open the door to the outside. The barren expanse of Juno 10 stretches to the horizon in all directions. As the twin moons dip from view, the star rising opposite washing everything out in a flat yellow torpor. Day or night, Jack has no preference. He just hurries up the metal steps to his cabin above. The room is minimal, to say the least. A table, a chair, and a crumpled mattress in one corner by way of a bed. A few dog-eared plans adorn the walls, but Jack looks at nothing as he shovels down his Spartan breakfast. He looks up from one of his final mouthfuls and turns to the window. Sure he's heard something. A percussive grating sound, still audible but within the dead calm of Juno 10, a long way off. He stands at the window and scans the horizon for movement, easy to pick out on the motionless terrain. He strains his eyes and the movement grows before slowly splitting into three and continuing toward him. He frowns at the intrusion and grabs his hat and torch from the table and makes his way outside. The strangers make no effort to hide their presence as they walk towards the pair of metal cabins stacked conspicuously on top of one another on the featureless plain. One man, in a bow tie and dark jacket, makes hard work of the uneven, broken ground. A pretty young woman beside him fares slightly better but is helped, as she stumbles, by a young man who guides her with an almost protective hand. Jack waves.
Watch out for the old!
He shouts over as they stumble the final few meters towards him. The pretty girl smiles, and it looks like she is about to deliver a greeting, but is cut short by the man in the bow tie.
I'm sorry, what hole?
He asks. Jack points to the plane in the opposite direction.
That one.
The trio of visitors stare hard into the expanse of nothingness, until gradually the dark of the opening brings it into perspective. A hole more than 20 meters wide stretches across the flat ground. The young girl seems conscious of their lack of manners and smiles at Jack.
Hello, my name's Zoe.
Jack.
Jack replies, responding to her smile.
I'm Jamie.
The young man chips in. He looks to the older man.
And this is the doctor.
He has to continue when the doctor says nothing.
It is my job to warn you about that hole.
Jack says sternly. The doctor regards Jack momentarily and then seems to brighten a little.
I'd say that your job is done then, Jack. Thank you very much.
Jack seems pleased with the appreciation of his work.
How long have you worked here, if you don't mind me asking?
Quizzes the doctor. Jack purses his lips and sucks in hard.
Ooh, a few centuries now, I reckon.
That long?
Well, it is a very big hole. Serious health and safety risk. Somebody might fall down it.
Unable to help themselves, Zoe, Jamie and the doctor all self-consciously cast a glance back towards the empty desert that surrounds them in all directions.
What race are you?
Asked the doctor, tilting his head to one side.
I'm a Larian. Little bit of Terrian on mother's side, but that's a long...
The doctor cuts him off.
All this is a little bit menial for a Larian, don't you think?
Jack doesn't know what to say, but Zoe is offended enough to say it for him.
Doctor...
she tuts, before turning back to Jack and smiling kindly.
We won't stay long, and we'll be very careful. We just want to have a look around. After we landed, the doctor did a scan which showed substantial cavities beneath the planet's crust and trace elements of some unusual minerals he thought we should investigate.
Jack slips off his hat and scratches his head.
Well, there's a big hole over there.
He points, trying to look helpful.
Would you mind awfully if we had a look?
Asked the doctor courteously. Jack sucks in his lips again.
Ooh, I'm not supposed to let anyone near the hole.
We promise we'll no fall in,
counters Jamie.
He's right. We'll be very careful,
says Zoe. Jack starts to warm to her smile, but not quickly enough for the doctor.
Let's have a quick look then, shall we?
He says briskly before striding off the best he can towards the hole. Zoe and Jamie move after him, Zoe giving Jack a comforting pat on the shoulder as they pass.
We'll let you know what we find.
Righto,
replies Jack. Zoe, Jamie and the doctor peer over the lip of the hole and stare down into the never-ending blackness.
Well, he was no lying. It's definitely a big hole,
says Jamie.
Yes, quite the local expert, isn't he?
Says the doctor.
I thought he was very helpful,
defends Zoe. The doctor considers the cavernous pit before them.
Well, there's one thing we can be sure of. What's that? The bottom of this hole would have some truly wonderful acoustics.
The doctor pulls his recorder from the inside of his jacket and wets his lips in preparation for a quick practice. Jamie nods.
Give me a set of pipes. I'd put you and that wee penny whistle to shame, so I would.
But he is cut off by a rapid succession of explosions, ripping up the ground in a concentric circle just behind them. The baked earth fractures and slips inwards, funneled into the hole along with the doctor and his companions. Jack doesn't flinch at the sharp crack of the explosions and just watches the three figures rapidly slip downwards from view, leaving only a rising cloud of dust in their wake. Then he sets off back to his cabin. He slams the door behind him with an annoyed huff and flips a switch hidden underneath one of the plans on the wall. The back of the cabin slips silently through the floor to reveal a bank of screens. A small control console flips out, and Jack drags around his chair to take the helm. His nimble hands stab a few buttons, and the center screen flashes into life. Audio of tumbling debris crackles from the speakers. A few screams and shouts for assistance from the doctor and his companions, mixed in with the cacophony of noise. Jack scans the screen as the dust clears. He sees Jamie helping Zoe to her feet and dusting her down.
Doctor, are you there?
She calls.
Right here, my dear.
The doctor emerges from the swirling dust and shakes the fine grains of earth from the end of his recorder. He slips it back into his pocket. There will be no recital today.
Why are you dead?
Hisses Jack to no one but himself. Jamie looks back up to the large opening on the wall behind them.
It was like a great big slide we were carving toward the end, I'm sure. Yes.
So he coughs through the dust.
That was what arrested our fall.
The doctor examines the expansive aperture as the dust clears.
This hole is not a hole,
he says.
We're in some sort of a maintenance or supply tunnel.
Jamie raps his knuckles on the polished metal walls.
Well, we'll no get back up the way we came in. There'll be no patches on the sides of that. Exactly, Jamie. We shall have to seek an alternative.
A distant mewing sound echoes from the caverns behind them, almost like a kitten, but sounding much bigger. Zoe takes a few steps backwards.
What was that? Maybe our way out. Come on!
He leads the others into the blackness, toward the sound. Jack does his best to track them on the other camera locations inside the tunnels.
Who are these people?
Sure, he's dealt with a few unsavory characters and species in his time, but he's always delivered. They have no cause to bother him, and none of them are in the business of just showing up and asking lots of silly questions. To hell with it, he thinks testily.
Doesn't matter who they are, or who they may or may not work for. They are in my caves now, and I'm going to kill all three of them.
Jack gets to work angrily. He is none too happy to have strangers creeping around below. Although he appeared to be a bumbling misfit, the older one had unsettled him with his pointed questions. And after all, they had managed to land undetected. Better to be safe than sorry. A 2-minute complete system flush with Hadron gas should see them off with minimal or no disruption to the work pattern. He almost manages a smile at his own efficiency, till a flashing number on a secondary screen catches his eye and causes him to pause. It's the holding stock screen, reading 86.9%. Almost a full load. A load that his buyers will already be waiting for. He considers for a few moments. It will take a good few minutes to prepare the flush, so best get the load away just in case. A few taps of the screen, and the launch sequence is initiated. Jack shrugs. So the load is a little light. They can take a credit. It's not like he's ever not delivered or will ever fail to again. A muffled crump of firing rocket motors gently shakes the base of the cabin and Jack relaxes. He takes a step out onto the gantry and watches the horizon as a multi-stage rocket creeps into view from its silo launch bay and begins powering skywards. Now this is beauty that Jack can admire. But his smile turns to a frown as the nose cone pops away and the first stage booster fizzles out to a limp smoke trail.
No!
The nose section begins to slowly descend under the power of the arrestor retros. The main body picks up speed and slams into the bedrock in a spectacular belly flop that is instantly engulfed in a huge fireball. Jack's voice cracks weakly.
No!
He stumbles down the steps and on toward the smoking ruins of a cargo that was 86.9% full. The ballistic foam bags burst all over the nose section and it flops onto the ground like a half-inflated beach ball, flaccidly rolling to a stop on a pile of loose shale. A sharp hiss reveals the outline of a door, which slides back. A pair of red eyes, set wide apart, blink inside the blackness of the capsule. Then a furry white halfling jumps down from the door, instantly reeling back at the glare of the early morning. Its eyes adjust quickly, and it is rapidly followed by a few dozen more. They swarm back and forth on the open plain before the appearance of the doctor in the doorway brings them to a standstill. But Jack does not react, even as the halflings begin to surround him, their excited mewing turning into an aggressive chattering. It is not until the doctor approaches with his companions that Jack turns from the pall of smoke in the distance. His knuckles whiten as he grips his torch with a fury and raises it above his head.
Look what you flipping did.
What we did?
Exclaims Zoe.
How did you get into my hauler?
He screams at her.
A 9-key binary code pad may be beyond the intellect of these poor creatures, but is of little trouble to me.
She scolds back.
The instructions for the ejection sequence were written down the sides.
The doctor points helpfully back to the capsule. For the first time, Jack notices the white furry creatures are beginning to draw closer.
Why have you let my halflings out of the mine? Why haven't they eaten you?
He rages. The doctor smiles and brandishes his recorder.
Nothing like a gentle tune to soothe the savage beast. What are they, doctor?
Asks Jamie.
A hybrid creature,
he replies.
No doubt genetically spliced and bred for their suitability for labouring in a branzine mine. Branzine? Yes, a rather old-fashioned and very dirty power source.
That is worth trillions!
Screams Jack as he brandishes his torch at the nearest halfling.
Well, yes,
admits the doctor.
But the way you are mining it means you will collapse this planet's core in a few more months.
Only after I've made my money.
You knew?
Asks Zoe.
But what about these creatures? They'll die. It's worse than that,
says the doctor grimly.
The implosion will pollute the better part of this quadrant.
There are other quadrants, other planets,
he says dismissively.
I've got three mapped out already.
So what exactly do you want so much money for?
Asks Jamie.
I need 8.5 bazillion to buy another planet in the Paradigm system,
replies Jack sulkily.
Another one?
Says Zoe incredulously.
Yeah, I've got 6.
Jamie looks at the pair of battered metal cabins stacked on top of one another.
You own 6 planets in the Paradigm system, and you live in that.
It's where I make my money,
Jack screams.
Save your breath, Jamie,
says the doctor.
He's a Larian of the Capiton caste.
He points to Jack's wildly roving eyes.
They possess a very distinctive retinal pattern and a uniquely twisted view of commerce. There is no end.
Zoe looks at Jack's world with growing pity.
Simply the means,
she adds sadly.
So that's why you've got us on the payload.
Exactly so, Jamie,
replies the doctor.
The first thing any Capitan is going to do in a crisis is save the merchandise.
Jack violently swings his torch at the halflings, who started to circle him, snarling.
I think you'd better come with us,
says the doctor.
But the mine! The money!
Stutters Jack.
Oh, can't we just let them eat him, Doctor? The greedy beggar tried to kill us,
protests Jamie.
Steady now, Jamie,
says the doctor. He takes a step forward and the creatures scuttle back a few paces from Jack.
Revenge is a dish best served cold.
His brow furrows in consideration.
Or maybe pleasantly warm with some spectacular sunsets.
He smiles.
Zoe, would you be so good as to prepare Jack's transmat, please?
The waves lap gently on the white sand, the axis of the system to its nearest star causing a permanent state of golden sunset on the azure horizon. Paradine Alpha, Jack's planet. Well, one of them at least. Jack begins to come round. As the warm water runs over his bare feet, his senses are drawn to the trickling sound of the crystal-clear stream that tumbles over the smooth grey rocks. It doesn't take long for it to dawn on him where he is.
No!
He begins to wail as he stumbles up the start of the beach and through the abundance of fruit trees and wild vegetables that grow on the rich soil. There is no advancement to be found here. Only contentment. The creatures lazily grazing on the hillside watch in cool bemusement at the flailing, screaming banshee that crashes aimlessly through the lush forest below them.